1 Kings chapter 4. So King Solomon was king over Israel. You remember chapter 2, cleaning house, chapter 3. He did all the sacrifices at, Shechem? No, it wasn't Shechem, it was Gibeon. Gibeon, the sacrifice there, it was a great high place. And he sacrificed all them sacrifices, you remember. And God came to him in a dream with a blank check, and he said, listen, I'm just a kid, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm in over my skis. How about some wisdom? A little help here. And God said, I love that. And he gave him wisdom, and he gave him longevity and blessings and riches and honor and just loaded him up with all he could carry off, right? And then we have that situation where the two women came to him with the one dead baby and one live baby. And okay, we got a conundrum here, you know. And he was able to settle it. That story's always fascinated me. Because, you know, if you read it long enough, like, how many of you, last time we went over that, was the first time you ever heard that story? Of course not. Of course not, right? You kind of, people are kind of sophisticated, which makes my job a lot, in some ways easier, but in most ways a lot more difficult. You know what I'm going to say. You know where this is going. I'm not telling a story that you guys are sitting on the edge of your seat like, I've never heard this before. This is crazy. But it also helps me, like, I can't cheat. I mean, I got to, but I wouldn't do that anyway. But the thing is that, you know good from bad doctrine. That's helpful, too. But it makes my job a little harder. Anyway, I'm always amazed at that story because I was thinking, like, if I never heard that story before, that would be like, that's incredible. How did he come up with that answer? And that's where we ended. So chapter 4 is King Solomon was king over all Israel. These were the princes. That's not right. Officials. Okay, King James word, princes. You think of a prince as the son of a king, and when dad tips over, he's going to have the throne. But these aren't in the royal line at all. These were the chief men, the officials, which he had. Azariah, the son of Zadok, the priest. Apparently, like priest in waiting, or you know, heir apparent. Elihoreph and Ahijah, the sons of Shisha, scribes. I think Shisha was David's scribe, so it's kind of like all of the family. But that's the way it was done a lot of times. I mean, not always, but if your father was like a carpenter and he was teaching you a trade, what would he teach you? He'd teach you carpentry, or if he's a tent maker or a baker or whatever, you know. That's kind of how it was. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, the recorder. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the host. We ran into him. And Zadok and Abiathar were the priests. Now, Abiathar at this point may not have been sent back to his hometown yet for his part in the rebellion. Or I don't know. Otherwise, it's a question mark to me. And Azariah, the son of Nathan, was over the officers, and Zabud, the son of Nathan, was principal officer and the king's friend. Like David had a friend, like an intimate, like kind of a counselor. And Ahishar was over the household, and Adoniram, the son of Abda, was over the tribute. No priest, I mean no prophet. Solomon's got a non-profit organization. We got priests, that's good. You need a prophet in your life. Better way to say it, you need prophecy in your life. David had Nathan and Gad the seer, both of them get in his face and say, Dave, bad idea. This is wrong. God's calling you to repent. I need those people in my life. You need them in yours. Why? Because we're prone to wander, Lord, I fear it, prone to leave the God I love. It's not just a song, it's a truth, it's a reality. And we have to have people who are checking on us. And I think that's one of the problems with Solomon, frankly. These are the names. Oh, Solomon had 12 officers, I'm in verse 7, of all Israel, which provided victuals for the king and his household. Each man his month and a year made provision. You got January, you got February, you got March, like that, except you got Nisan, you got Sylvan, you got, you know, and because they're different months, right? Different names. And the new year is different, which, by the way, is in the fall, Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year. It's concurrent with the Feast of Trumpets. And their spiritual year, their ecclesiastical year, whatever you want to call it, starts in Nisan. That's the month they came out of Egypt. We'll talk a little bit about that, them coming out of Egypt. So these are the 12 officers. These are their names. The son of Hur in Mount Ephraim, the son of Dekar in Machaz, and in Shalabim and Beth Shemesh, and Elon Beth Hanan, the son of Hesed in Araboth. To him pertaineth Sokah and the land of Hepher, the son of Abinadab, and all the region of Dor, which had Tapath, the daughter of Solomon, to wife. That's interesting to me. I don't think he's old enough. Well, I don't know exactly when this is. I don't think he's built the temple yet. I don't think he's old enough to have a daughter of marriageable age. Maybe it's talking about this guy, and later on, because he's going to reign for like 40 years. Then it becomes, you know, he has children and his daughter becomes this guy's wife. I don't know. Baana, the son of Ahilud, to him pertaineth Taanach and Megiddo and all Beth Shean, which is by Zatanath, beneath Jezreel, from Beth Shean to Bel Mahola, even unto the place that is beyond Jokneam. The son of Geber in Ramoth Gilead, to him pertaineth the towns of Jair, the son of Manasseh, which are in Gilead. To him also pertaineth the region of Argob, which is in Bashan. 70 great cities with walls and brazen bars. Ahinadab, the son of Edo, and Mahanaim. Ahimaz was in Naphtali. He also took Basmath, the daughter of Solomon, to wife. Baana, the son of Hushai, was in Asher and Eloth. Jehoshaphat, the son of Perua, in Issachar. Shimei, the son of Elah, in Benjamin. Geber, the son of Uri, was in the country of Gilead, in the country of Sihon, king of the Amorites, and of Og of Bashan, and he was the only officer which was in the land. In that land, I think, is the idea. So this is the United Kingdom. It's Saul, David, and Solomon, and that's it. When Solomon has a son, he's foolish. It's funny, you get the wisest. Okay, he's not going to live up to Solomon's standard, but he'd have to be a total buffoon, right? I think we all have a right to play the idiot sometimes. Some of us abuse the privilege more than others. And this guy, when we see him, it's not going to be good. But this is it. So from Dan to Beersheba, in the different tribes, he's got officers who basically take the whole month and feed the household. The kings, all those who are eating at his table. Well, you say, that can't be too bad. We just went over the list. Yeah, there's about, 20, 30 people there. You got to figure, oh no. Verse 20, Judah and Israel were many, as the sandwiches by the sea in multitude, eating and drinking and making merry. How many are there? Well, you can't count them. That was the prophecy. And by the way, you shouldn't try. Ask David. They were multitude, okay? They were as many as the sandwiches by the sea. Eating and drinking, it says making merry. Having a good time is the idea. Happy to be eating and drinking. This isn't talking about any debauched partying, drunken revelry. It's just having plenty. When I read it this week, it hit me in a way that it had in the past. I think it's prophetic, and I'll show you why I think that. Oh, it's history. We're talking about something that happened. It certainly happened the way the Scripture says so. But I think it's prophetic of an age to come. And Solomon reigned over all kingdoms from the river unto the land of the Philistines under the border of Egypt. They brought presents and served Solomon all the days of his life. Now you should look at a map, the kingdom under Solomon, as it's given to you by Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever search engine, Safari, whatever you're into, check it out. And you'll see most of the maps go to the River Jordan, some of them kind of on the other side a little bit to modern-day Jordan, at least the northern part, and it goes up into modern-day Syria. But the river here, I think, is the river, Euphrates. When Scripture talks about the river, it's talking about the Euphrates River. Now that's Baghdad. That's Babylon. That's a long ways from there. And it was the biggest. And some of the maps, I had to go through about 7 or 8 or 9 maps where I finally found one going all the way to Euphrates. I'm thinking, well, you're the most biblical. I'm going to give you the gold star today. And I think that's it. He was given peace all around. David had conquered some people. David had some wars, and now this is what it looks like. He reigned over all kingdoms, not just Israel, kingdoms, plural, from the river unto the land of the Philistines. Land of the Philistines, read here the Gaza Strip. When you read the 5 cities of the Philistines, they're all in modern-day what we would consider the Gaza Strip. And unto the border of Egypt. Egypt is always Egypt. They never invade, they never own. They got out of Egypt, and Egypt is Egypt, okay? It stays the same. They bought presents and served Solomon all the days of his life. Read here taxes and the like. And Solomon's provision for one day was 30 measures of fine flour. And he said, that doesn't sound so bad. That's about 330 bushels. And 60 measures of meal, which is twice as much, so that's 660 bushels. 10 fat oxen. You know how many people you can feed with one ox? Well, we had one. You remember? It was a skinny ox in Haiti, but it fed half the town. Everyone was there. The missionary's wife, I never had ox before that. I've never had it since. I've never had oxtail soup or anything like that. Ox is fine. It's like any kind of meat on the hoof. Really depends how you cook it. It was charcoal briquettes when she got done of it. There was no life in it. There was no blood in it. It was charcoal briquettes. So I can't tell you that how was it? Was it good? If you like eating charcoal, it was good. But I like my meat, you know, rare to very rare, okay? And if it's raised right, you don't really worry about that as much as if it's raised wrong and it's full of injections and stuff like that. But 10 fat oxen, and these aren't skinny oxen, hon. These are fat oxen. There's a lot. So this is every day. There's no leftovers, right? 20 oxen out of the pasture. So we get fat, you know, we had them in the stall and they got fattened up. You know, we kill the fatted calf. It's like that, but there's 10 oxen that are fatted up every day. And then 20 out of the pastures, okay? And 100 sheep, that's the table I'm at, okay? I love lamb. Besides harts and roebucks and fallow deer and fatted fowl, what, geese, right, ducks? For he had dominion over all the region on this side of the river from Tipsa, even to Aza, over all the kings on this side of the river, and he had peace on all sides round about him. Now, this is the verse that got me thinking. And Judah and Israel dwelt safely, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, from Dan even to Beersheba, all the days of Solomon. Does that remind you of another age to come? I think it's in the book of Isaiah. We learn more about the millennial kingdom in Isaiah And in the Old Testament, then we ever learn about in Revelation chapter 20. The only thing Revelation chapter 20 adds to our understanding is that it's 1,000 years. We understood from many passages in the Old Testament it's a long period of time, the kingdom age, but only Revelation chapter 20 puts it at 1,000, the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. And it says about that prophetically in the book of Isaiah, and I could have looked it up, every man dwelling in safely, every man under his vine, under his fig tree, which talks about peace. Do you think you're going to have an uprising against Jesus Christ? Well, actually, you are at the end of that age. That's a story for another time. You think there's going to be wars and skirmishes, and you think there's going to be all kinds. You think, like, Russia is going to invade Ukraine during Christ's millennial reign? I don't think so. Are we going to worry about China and Taiwan? And nope. All borders are restored, but they're not like very hard to cross. But it's not like a thing, because why would you come to America from like a southern country? It's just every bit as wonderful there. There's not any place on earth where the blessing of Jesus Christ won't reach. And it has that every man under his vine, under his fig tree. I think to make us think in terms of, and I've never seen it before, make us think in terms of the kingdom. It's like that. Peace, prosperity, you're just getting fat, dumb, and happy every day with all that you want, all that you can eat. Will there be work? Oh, there'll be plenty of work. I think we're supposed to work. I think we go to heaven and we just, now I'm just going to sit on a cloud and that's it. I'm all done. You know, we talk about retirement. We're just changing our work address. I think you work till you tip over, and I think that's a blessing. I think it's a good thing to be working. Now work is cursed, and we earn our bread by the sweat of our brow, and now we're contending with thorns and thistles, but it's still a blessing, and it's still made to be a blessing. And Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses. Uh-oh. This is the first thing we read about Solomon that it can give you a little bit of pause. Why is that? What were the three things that kings were forbidden to multiply in Numbers of Deuteronomy? I think it's Deuteronomy. Nope, wives and horses you get right. And gold, right? Chariots go with horses, but don't multiply them because it's not going to give you the victory. You know, I'm glad we have a strategic nuclear defense. I'd rather just have a righteous country. Because I don't care what kind of defense you put up, if God's not going to bless, unless the Lord watch the house, you can stay up all night and watch your house, but you're watching it in vain if God's not in it, right? Lest the Lord build the house, they that build it labor in vain. Lest the Lord watch the city, it says, they that watch it keep it. And it's not even, forget about it. It's going to be taken if God's not in it. So he had 40,000 stalls of horses, and you don't multiply wives for the obvious reason. It's not about lust, and it's not about... And God said, you do that, foreign wives are going to drag your heart away from the Lord. Wives, you have this immense superpower. You have a pull, a draw. You can really control. I'm not suggesting you should, but you really can control a man to a very large degree and in a harmful and devious way if you use your superpower for evil instead of good. And God said, no, kings, don't multiply wives. You should marry one, even in the times of the kings. I'll give you all the kids you need. Don't worry about it. And don't multiply gold. Because it's not about lust, it's not about avarice, it's not about You know, we said before so many times, he who dies with the most toys wins, right? No. No. You buy all the things that you think are going to make you happy. Have they ever yet? Even once ever? That new car I've been wanting so much, I drive it out of the showroom, off the lot, and I'm thinking, what have I done? It's never satisfies. It never takes you to the place you think it's going to. Or whatever it is. Whatever it is. Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots. He set up his defense. And those officers provided victual for King Solomon, for all that came into King Solomon's table, every man in his month. They lacked nothing. Barley also, and straw for horses and dromedaries, brought they unto the place where the officers were, every man according to his charge. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding exceeding much, and largeness of heart. This generosity. So he's wise and he's generous. And he's got the wealth to be generous. No, I take that back. You don't need wealth to be generous. You just need to be generous to be generous. But if you have both of those things, it's a wonderful combination. He had largeness of heart, even as the sand that is on the seashore. And Solomon's wisdom excelled the wisdom of all the children of the East country and all the wisdom of Egypt. And you're probably thinking, well, I bet he wasn't smarter than Ethan the Ezrahite. Oh, no, for he was wiser than all men, than Ethan the Ezrahite. And He-Man, if you're thinking He-Man, he's not smart. He's just master of the universe. I think, trying to think of his name, his archenemy there, Skull Guy, Skeletor. Skeletor was probably smarter, but anyway, He-Man and Chalcol and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was in all nations round about. So he's the wisest man on earth, and there's other people who are wise, noticeable. So whoever you put in that category, who do you think? Oh, it's got to be Einstein. Einstein was incredible. Yeah, nope, smarter than him. Okay? And I don't care, Ethan the Ezrahite, whatever name you put there, no, he had it going on. Again, if I get a chance to pray, there's the point where God says, A.M., anything you want. I'll say, I want to be a man after God's own heart. I won't say no to wisdom. I like wisdom. I think I need more of it than less of it. At the end of the day, it wasn't enough to keep him in line. Think about that. And this is talking about some of his smarts now. He spake 3,000 proverbs. I've never written a proverb. And his songs were 1,005. I'm still waiting on my first hit to come to me here. Now, we know one of his songs only. He wrote 1,005, and we know the Song of Songs. He spake of trees from the cedar trees that is in Lebanon. So he's a what's that, a botanist or a arborist, right? Even unto the hyssop that springeth out of the wall. So he's into, is that horticulture or agriculture? He spake also of beasts and of fowl. So he's an ornithologist and an animal person. What's that? I don't even know. See, I'm not even smart enough to know what the names of these people are. And all creeping things. So he's a bug guy. Entomologist. And of all fishes, ichthyologist or pescatologist or some fishy word, right? He knows a lot about a lot of stuff. He knows about the animal kingdom. He knows about everything that grows. He's incredible. You could talk to him for hours, and he'd regale you with all these insights of, you know why, you know, chickens walk that way, and why they cross the road, and why all, and you'd just be sitting there rapt. Your attention would be just like, wow, he knows so much stuff. It's incredible. And there came of all people to hear the wisdom of Solomon from all kings of the earth, which had heard of his wisdom. So now he's got fame. He's got fortune. He's got it all. And he writes about all of it in the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. But what's for another time? Chapter 5. Okay. And Hiram, the king of Tyre, sent his servants unto Solomon, for he had heard that he had anointed him king in the room of his father. For Hiram was ever a lover of David. So David and Hiram are friends, and now Hiram and Solomon are friends, because you know how that works. And Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, Thou knowest how that David my father could not build a house under the name of the Lord his God for the wars which were about him on every side. It's not exactly how God put it. God said, you're a bloody man. But Solomon goes a little easier. No, he's got too many wars to fight. He can't build a house. Until the Lord put them under the soles of his feet. Now the Lord my God hath given me rest on every side, so that there is neither adversary nor evil occurrent. Again, isn't that kind of kingdom-like to you? Millennial kingdom-like? No evil occurrent. That's no evil activity. Is there a mafia in Jesus' day? Are there people abducting children into sex slavery in the kingdom age? No, 1,000 times no. Is there any, bank robber out there that, keeps getting away and we can't catch him, or a mugger, or is there jaywalking in the cat? We don't even know, right? I mean, it boggles the mind. But he's not, the Lord's giving me rest. There's nobody attacking. There's no one I have to really deal with. Everything's going good. Plenty of money. Everyone's under his vine, under his fig tree. There's safety on every side. Seems like a good time to build. And behold, I purpose to build a house under the name of the Lord my God, as the Lord spake unto David my father, saying, thy son whom I will set upon thy throne in thy room, he shall build a house under my name. Now therefore, command thou that they hew me cedar trees out of Lebanon, and my servants shall be with thy servants, and unto thee will I give hire for thy servants, according to all that thou shalt appoint. For thou knowest that there is not among us any that can skill to hew timber like unto the Sidonians. Hey, you guys got it going on, and we know that, so we're going to hire you. I'll give you some able-bodied guys. Maybe you can show them some of the trade, but look, they'll apprentice unto you. You got the skill set that we need. Is he blowing smoke up this skirt to just kind of, incur favor? No, I think that it's the real deal. They have these humongous cedars of Lebanon. And unless you've been working with them all your life, you probably don't know anything about them. How do you cut down a tree that's 200 feet tall? Right? Very carefully. Think about it. If you have someone, you got a tree that's growing close to the house, and the insurance company says you got to get rid of that, a high wind, it's going to be all over. You can't just hire, Joe down the street with a chainsaw, comes zoom, 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 at the bottom and tips over, and now we don't have to worry about your house at all, right? You got to know, people know what they're doing. It came to pass when Hiram heard, I will give hire for thy servants, according to all that thou shalt appoint. You got a blank check. Look, I'm going to hire your people, and I'll pay them what is right. Whatever you think is, that'll be our contract. Are you kidding me? He's got wealth, and he's not afraid to share it. He's got largeness of heart. He knows that God's going to bless. He has never wanted for anything in his life. At this point, he loves the Lord, and he trusts the Lord. We're going to build a house. Are we going to start cheaping out on hinges and windows? And, let's make this, get this as cheap as we possibly can. No, we're that. And we're not even that, really, if you think about it. But we look at the sale price of things. We don't just, and this church is beautifully underappointed. Rustic is the word, right? And I like that. I do. If somebody gave me like $1 million of here, build, I'm like, I don't know what I'd do with that. We would put bathrooms in this building instead of having to walk across. That's what we'd do with it, right? And we'd probably do it ourselves. We wouldn't even hire it out because we're so, we like to do that, the stuff, right? I don't know, maybe bathrooms would be different as far as the plumbing acts. I don't know. But just think about it. Hey, here, now we've got prosperity. Now you've got prosperity. We're hiring all the Sidonians that you can put at our service to. Does this bless Hiram? I'm sure it does. When they You know, nobody wants them to build a nuclear power plant in their backyard. Nobody wants that. But you'd like them. As the thing's going up and all the stores and the restaurants and the hotels nearby are all there and people are cutting building because now we're going to need workers and now we're going to need not only construction people, then we have people to man this. It's going to generate a lot of income. Or maybe not nuclear power, maybe just business. We want to be far enough away from it so we don't, it doesn't spoil our view, but close enough to it so we can commute every day to work, right? We live in Maine. We're a different bunch. Came to pass when Hiram heard the words of Solomon that he rejoiced greatly. Of course it blessed him. And he said, blessed be the Lord this day that he hath given unto David a wise son over his great people. And Hiram sent to Solomon, saying, I have considered the thing which thou sentest to me for, and I will do all thy desire concerning timber of cedar and concerning timber of fir. My servant shall bring them down from Lebanon unto the sea. I will convey them by sea in floats unto the place that thou shalt appoint me. And I will cause them to be discharged there, and thou shalt receive them. And thou shalt accomplish my desire in giving food for my household. So, you're going to have to pay for this, and this is the cost, and such, and okay. And so they're hammering out the details of the deal. So Hiram gave Solomon cedar trees and fir trees according to all his desire. In other words, as many as he wanted. I saw a video the other day. This is a temple that Solomon built, and it was reduced to rubble at the end of the book of Jeremiah. We know that. And then Ezra and Nehemiah came back and they built the temple. And the people who saw them lay the foundation cried because the people who remember Solomon's temple said, oh, it's nothing to be compared. Now, it was a magnificent temple eventually. Herod the Great, that I think that was his own moniker for himself. They said, if you never saw the temple, you never saw a building. It was gorgeous. It was just perfect. And there were so many things about it that he had, like, the man was a genius as far as building was. Oh, he was ruthless. He was a parasite. He was a horrible human being, but he was genius in building. And God used that despot to build the second temple, which was greater in glory. Why? One reason only. Give me a biblical reason. Jesus was there. Now that temple was reduced to ruin, and so they're waiting for the third temple. The third temple will be desecrated by the Antichrist, and there's much scripture on that. So they think that the third temple is Ezekiel's temple. In the last 8 chapters of the book of Ezekiel, 9 chapters, starts in chapter 40, talking about the temple that shall be. Now, you should watch a video on that, and it shows you the splendor. It's computer-generated, I get that, which is good, because even a model of it would be hard. But it is so elaborate, so beautiful, and that's the one that will be built, I think, by Christ during the kingdom age. Or you think he's going to take off his, you know, put on his tunic and, you know, gird his loins and come out with his hammer, and I don't know exactly. He'll have his say on how he always has had his say on how the temples are constructed. So I think he'll have his say then too. And he's already given us the blueprints. Again, they're fastidiously laid out in those last chapters of Ezekiel, which I'm teaching on Sunday night. I don't know if you guys had a chance to follow. It's really an incredible book. Maybe I'm not an incredible teacher, and I always got that, like, oh, I'm just such a wordsmith, and I give you such word pictures that they're just incredible. No, I'm not, but I can teach it in such a way, and it's a wonderful book. I think it kind of stands on its own. It's so wonderful, I can't butcher it that bad. So check it out. That's my one commercial. Okay, so my servant's going to bring them, I'm going to give you all, blah, blah, blah. So Hiram gave Solomon cedar trees and fir trees according to all his desire, verse 10. And Solomon gave Hiram 20,000 measures of wheat, for food to his household, 20 measures of pure oil, thus gave Solomon to Hiram year by year. That's 220,000 bushels and 1,700 gallons of pure oil. You know, the olive oil you drink all the time isn't olive oil. It's just not. They keep the good stuff for themselves. They don't. You can get it. Well, it costs a lot. But this is stuff. This isn't like seconds or leftovers or, you know, it's watered down with grapeseed oil or canola oil. This is the good stuff. 1,700 gallons. Okay. And I love olive oil. I love olives. I love all things olive. And olive oil is the best. And by the way, it's such a superfood. It is so good for you. The Lord gave Solomon wisdom as he promised him. And there was peace between Hiram and Solomon. And they two made a league together. This should be. And there's always... You, like on this project I'm on, you know, it starts out like, oh, it's going to be big and grand. We're going to have, everyone's going to make money. And then it always, you know, there's cost, there's overruns, there's blame, there's, you know, not that I care, not only because I'm retiring, but I mean, when you work with the tools, you're under all that. You don't know. You show up for work every day. You work. You don't, if the company's making $1 billion a day or losing $1 million, we don't care. I get my check, it clears, I don't care, nobody cares, you know what I mean? And we shouldn't. We should care about showing up on time, doing a good day's work for the amount of pay we get, and calling it a day. That's what you're supposed to care about. But then there's pointing fingers, and the laborers are falling behind, and the millwrights, and we can't because they're here, and then there's pointing fingers, and panic, and all this. No, it's supposed to be like a joint venture. The people who propose this, they can't build it. They don't have the skill set. And the people who can build it can't engineer it. I mean, we need all these ones coming together, and none of us has the money to finance it ourselves. Listen, we'll build this thing for a year and a half, and then when we're finally done, we'll just get profits back to the point where we made it. No, it doesn't work that way. There's got to be some venture capitalists. Everyone has their hand in it, and it's fine. It's the way it is, and we're all supposed to be one big happy. But that some people just, I don't know, it always turns sour, it always gets crazy, it always, trust me, I've been around for a long time. No, everyone's making money. Solomon's losing money, he's not, but he's doing what God had told him to do, what David wanted him to do. He's Solomon. And Hiram's like got plenty coming in, and he's got all his guys, his kingdom, as many as want to work. They got plenty of work to do. Everyone's happy, right? And King Solomon raised a levy out of all Israel, and the levy was 30,000 men. What is a levy? In verse 13. Yeah, they're labor, but doesn't he already have laborers? What's a levy? It is labor. You don't got anything in verse 13? It is tribute, but what, I'm looking for a key word, forced labor, conscripted, that's the word, conscripted, forced labor, yes. Well, wait a second, now all of a sudden that ain't so cool, yes it is. They're in Israel, but they're not Israelites. Okay, you're gonna live here, you're going to have the benefits of being in Israel, we're going to put you to work. They get paid. Don't worry about it. He's largest of heart. But nobody's sitting on the sidelines. So I got a big capital investment. I got a big outlay here. It's a big project. You can't be sitting there doing nothing. This is workfare. In my thinking, I think that's wonderful. Welfare should be for a few weeks, maybe a couple, 3 months, maybe like some job stops, and we're gonna get some people retraining, and we gotta, that's fine. Giving people a hand up rather than a handout, I believe in that. I think Scripture teaches that. I think it's one of these very subtle verses. I don't want to make too much of this. I think it's one of these subtle places that talk about that. Conscripted labor. Again, we've all had seen the guy, you know, by the red light, and His jacket's very nice. Why does he own a dog if he's homeless? And how's he feeding him? And what am I giving to? And he's smoking a cigarette. Listen, I own a house and I can't afford cigarettes. Not that I want to smoke the nasty things, but I wonder how you, who don't even own a house, think you can afford cigarettes. And now you want my money too. I did come out of Home Depot in Bangor, and there was a guy in the middle there, and I told him, hey, they're hiring right back. And he wasn't blessed. The words he used to me weren't blessing words, okay? They were hiring at Home Depot, and he was outside of, no, he don't want to work. He wants to have you work and give you his money. I'm sorry, I don't believe in that. I want to help you, but I don't know if that's going towards drugs. I don't want to buy Alpo. I mean, I really don't. You know, and I certainly don't want to buy you cigarettes. Forced labor. He raised the levy. The levy was 30,000 men. He sent them to Lebanon. Look at 10,000 a month by courses. A month they were in Lebanon, 2 months at home. What does that mean? So you have team A, that's 10,000. They're off to Lebanon. B and C stay back in Israel. Now, a month later, B goes, and A and C are still back in Israel. And then, you know, a month later, C goes. Now we have A and B. And that's how it works. It's rotating, so you get a month in Lebanon at work, and you get 2 months home. And you get plenty, because, you probably get, you know, per diem, some sort of away pay, travel pay. They take care of your hotel, your accommodations, your food. And it's enough so that when you're home, you're sitting around idle for 2 months waiting for your next, because they don't want to break up homes. They don't want you on the road all the time. I've known people who have worked out of a suitcase and worked and just sent their money home and stuff like that, and they seem to all be divorced. I don't, you know, God bless a guy who wants to go on the road and make money when it's the only thing available, you know, try to make ends meet and stuff. But I don't think that's what God generally, you know. I know traveling salesmen and people are never home, and God bless them. I don't want to be, I'm not judgmental. We, you know, we have over-the-road truckers. God bless them. We need that, right? That's your home enough. That's kind of my thinking, right? Now, if you some of you have a truck route and they're home every night. Some have over-the-road and they're cross-country and they're going to be home, you know, next week sometime. We get it, and that's fine. But he's making allowances for this because he doesn't want to, you know, these happy homes to break up. So you're working for a month and you're off for 2 months. By the end of 2 months, your wife's probably saying, isn't it? You're getting your time. Okay. Solomon had 70,000 that bear burdens. So just pack mules. The guy can't do a lot. He's not very sophisticated. He doesn't know a trade, but he's young and he's got a strong back. Let's put him to work. Solomon, 70,000, that's 70,000, that bear burdens. 80,000, that's 80,000, hewers in the mountains. They're up working with the Sidonians, right? He's got 80,000 who are just skilled craftsmen. Beside the chief of Solomon's officers, which were over the work, 3,300. Now you can do that ratio there of how many foremen, that's what foremen, right? They ruled over the people and they work too, and they wrought in the work. So not just sitting in the office drinking coffee all day. They're out working with, but they make sure that everyone's got a job, everyone's doing what. You know what the worst things are is when you don't have a foreman who's, so you're sitting around waiting, but I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing today. I finished off the job I did yesterday, and now I wish somebody, and if I'm standing around for the whole day, oh, that's a bad, bad day. And I'll let everyone know it. I'll go right in the office. Yeah, can you give me a foreman or something? Well, I haven't had that problem in this job. I really haven't, okay? And you haven't had it in a while because I've been in situations where, like, I know what I'm doing today. I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I know what I'm doing the next day. I'm just going to keep on until somebody puts me on a different trajectory, and then I'll do that. And sometimes, you know, you have to go put out this fire. You have to do this first, and you can get back to that later after you do this because we need this done yesterday. And we let, and if you're a good foreman, that's a wonderful thing. That's a beautiful human being who can direct work and keep, you know, 10 or 12 guys going, or 20 guys, and make sure everyone's productive, and checking, do you have all your stuff you need? Do you have the right information? Do you have the right tools? And that's a beautiful thing. I'm just saying. And when you don't, it's a horrible thing when you don't have a good foreman. And at this point, my grand, and probably for a long time, I don't put up with bad foremen. I just, come on, get me out of this guy's crew. He doesn't know anything. He's only a few times. So you have these people who are over, and the king commanded, and they brought great stones, costly stones, huge stones laid to the foundation of the house. It's not just wood. It's incredible jewels. Very costly, very costly. This reminds us, of course, of the like the foundation stones of the New Jerusalem, and the stones that were in the breastplate of the high priest. You guys like stones? You girls, you rock people. And Susan's nodding. I never knew that about you. Really, like a crow, shiny small things. She just likes them so much, right? You like rocks and diamonds and opals and pearls and stuff like that. No? That's just rocks. Yeah. All right. What about you? Not so much? Yeah, you don't seem like that kind. How about you guys? You like that? Huh? Not so much. Maybe we get a mix here. Brenda, I didn't ask you. You like that? If he buys you a nice ruby ring for Christmas, you like that? Okay. I'll tell him. Tell him. Keep that girl in rubies. I don't know. I think God put it in the heart of many women like diamonds. A girl's best friend, right? I'm sure they're not a girl's best friend, but they certainly seem to like them. I don't know. And not everybody, you know. I don't think you can paint with too broad a brush when you talk about females or males. Males are typically, and then we have so many atypical, and whatever the typical, there's so many atypical. Okay, I should finish up. And Solomon's builders and Hiram's builders did hew them and the stone corers, so they prepared timber and stones to build the house. Now, I want to talk about chapter 6, verse 1 briefly. Came to pass in the 480th year, after the children of Israel will come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the Mount Ziph, which is the second month, that he, what's the first month? Nisan, I already said, right? That's when Passover and unleavened bread and Feast of First Fruits is. And so Mount Ziph is the second month. So it's in the month Ziph, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. Solomon's reign is 971 B.C. to 913 B.C. It goes down in B.C. as the years pass, they go less, less, less. You know that, right? So he begins to build in 967 B.C., but we've got it's the 480th year after the children of Israel come out of the land of Egypt. When is the Exodus? 1447 B.C. Now, many Egyptologists disagree. And they say, oh, there was never, you know, forced labor in Egypt, and there was never the children of Israel, and they never came out, and there was never this huge amount of people in the wilderness. Oh, there was. For so, so, so many reasons. And there's so many YouTube videos that chronicle this now. It's like embarrassing amount of riches, you know, where they found, like, coral in the bottom of the Red Sea, shaped like, you know, chariot wheels, and I mean, it's so many incredible things. The pillars where they crossed from the you know, Egyptian side over into, it's Saudi Arabia. Well, it's Arabia. It wasn't Saudi Arabia at the time. It was Arabia, and David Guzik went with a team of Calvary Chapel pastors and others up to, I think they call it Abel el-Laws. We know it as Mount Sinai. It's not in the Sinai Peninsula. So we know when they came out, we know where they went, We know much, much, much. By the way, so who's the Pharaoh of the Exodus? It was, I think his mother, the princess that got him out of the water there, as far as I could tell, is Hatshepsut, if you remember your ancient history. She was kind of more of a Pharaoh than her husband was, I think. She kind of was the daughter of Pharaoh, and she married this guy and all. And I think that was his mom. But that's around the time of Thutmose and the Mose dynasty. And I think that's why his name is Moses. And because, like, people say, you know, if it's this time here, no, there's no hint of that. There's no, because you look at the wrong time. And then if you go up to the Sinai Peninsula, look for Mount Sinai, now you're in the wrong place. I mean, follow the Bible as your blueprint. And one of the things, I told you about Expedition Bible. I'll end. I know, it's 8 o'clock. We're in, so you get out of here. I told you about Expedition Bible. The most exciting thing about watching that show is when he finds something that's biblical. And he finds, this is what the Bible wrote about, and this is it. It's right here. And if you go to Israel, hopefully soon, we'll be able to again, and you'll see things that were spoken about. Now here it is in living, breathing color. It's an actual, it's a wonderful thing. But anyway, 1447 B.C. Yeah, we have a date. We know Solomon's reign. We know these things.